Welcome to the WP Builds Podcast, bringing you the latest news from the WordPress community. Now, welcome your hosts, David Wormsley and Nathan Wrigley.
Hello there, and welcome once more to the WP Builds Podcast. You have reached episode number 384, entitled Surveying the WordPress Industry, Revenue Trends and Challenges with Kyle Van Dusen. It was published on Thursday, the 8th of August, 2024. My name's Nathan Wrigley, and a few bits of housekeeping before we get into the main event with Kyle. The first thing to mention is that if you are interested in what we do at WP Builds, head over to our subscribe page, wpbuilds.com/subscribe, and subscribe to our newsletter. We will email you twice a week, once when this podcast comes out with a little bit of an explanation of what's been going on in that episode, but also we'll email you on a Tuesday to let you know about the This Week in WordPress episode. We record that live on a Monday and then we put it out as a podcast on Tuesday. Speaking of which, if you fancy joining us for that, head over to wpbuilds.com/live every Monday, 2 p.m. UK time, and join an international set of panelists and commenters as we talk about the WordPress news from the previous week. The other thing to mention is that if you have a product or service in the WordPress space, please feel free to use the WP Builds podcast to advertise that. Head to wpbuilds.com/advertise where you can find out more. And here come three companies that did just that. The WP Builds podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. Find out more by visiting go.me/WPBuilds. We're also supported by Bluehost. Bluehost, redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud, managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. And finally, we are also supported by Omnisend. Omnisend, do you sell stuff online? Then meet Omnisend. Yes, that Omnisend, the email and SMS tool that helps you make $73 from every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of roller coaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up? Try Omnisend today at omnisend.com. And sincere thanks go out to GoDaddy Pro, Bluehost, and Omnisend for keeping the lights on over at WP Builds. Okay, what have I got for you today? Well, I'm joined today by Kyle Van Dusen. Kyle, as you may or may not know, is the proprietor, let's call it that, of the Admin Bar, which is a gigantic and growing online community. And each year for the past few years, Kyle has carried out a survey where he surveyed the freelancer landscape in the WordPress space and come up with some conclusions. So this year, 1,100 participants talked to Kyle all about their trials and tribulations, what works, what doesn't work, what they're earning, what their niches are, and so much more. And Kyle and I delve into that today. I hope that you enjoy it. I am joined on the podcast today by Kyle Van Dusen. Hello, Kyle.
It is so awesome to be here. Thank you so much, Nathan.
You're more than welcome. Kyle, I don't know if you've been following Kyle's progress, but Kyle has a really strong WordPress community. I'm going to say it's like 10,000 people or something. Is that about right?
We will hit 10,000 in May of 2024.
Nice.
So we're about a month out.
Okay. So it's called the Admin Bar. It is a Facebook group, but also, as you're about to hear, the purpose of this podcast is to talk about something that Kyle did recently. It's also a website, a community. They produce content. There's various products surrounding it as well. Let's get to know Kyle a little bit first. Just rewind the clock for us. Give us your, I guess, WordPress bio. Go back further if you like. Tell us about your childhood, your education, whatever it is that you want to say.
Yeah, we'll start with my childhood trauma.
Okay, we'll okay. Tell me about your father.
Exactly. So I worked for about 15 years as a graphic designer, burnt out on working for somebody else and making them rich, and started looking at ways to start my own business. And didn't really have any web experience at that point, but found WordPress and started figuring things out, and naively sold things I shouldn't have, like most of us did, to get into this business. And about a year later, I was a proud business owner. And so that was back in 2017. So been a few years now, and have grown that business since. So the agency still exists and is still growing. And a couple years into that journey, I actually met somebody online who did similar work. And we realized that as we started talking more about our business, because we were both kind of doing this on an island, as we started talking more about our business with each other, we realized how much our businesses were growing, and we were learning from each other. I'm like, well, there's got to be, if two people can do this and multiply, there's probably thousands of people out there like us. Can we build kind of a community with this ethos? So we started the Admin Bar in 2018, I believe, and just tried to get like-minded people in there, agency owners, freelancers, people in the WordPress space to join in. And we just share all kinds of things about the struggles of dealing with clients and growing our agency and technical WordPress bits and all those kinds of things. So my time is kind of split between those two things. Out of the Admin Bar, like you said, is come products and some private communities, some mastermind type groups. So I spend about 70% of my time running that community and the various things that go along with it, and about 30% of my time dealing with the agency stuff. So that's it in a nutshell.
Wow, there's a lot going on in there. Would you say that design is your big love in this industry? You know, strip out the community bit and the Admin Bar. If you were to be building a website, do you find yourself drawn more to the kind of like the laying things out and the color palettes and getting in Figma and things like that, rather than the playing with plugins and all of that?
You know, I do enjoy that quite a bit, but because I spent so many years doing that, not that I'm any good at it, but it feels second nature. So I don't have to spend a lot of time on design stuff, because I can kind of rinse and repeat a lot of that. So I actually get more into, like, I don't know, maybe 2 years ago, I really, you know, this was far into starting my agency, but we had Elementor and all those kinds of things. We didn't have to touch code. So a little over 2 years ago, I started diving into like really learning CSS. So now I spend most of my time like trying to come up with cool ideas inside of CSS and code and stuff like that. So that's actually what interests me most now, but that's because I'm kind of further behind on the learning curve with that side of things.
Do you have a set of tools? You mentioned that you'd been through a bunch of tools, and you mentioned Elementor and things like that. Do you have a bunch of tools that, as of April 2024, when we're recording this, do you have a bunch of tools that are sort of like your go-to, your arsenal?
Yeah, so I got burnt out on some of the things with Elementor a few years back, and I switched over to Oxygen, and that kind of blew my mind, and I didn't know how it all worked and had to learn a lot. That's about, coincidentally, the time I started really diving into CSS. That didn't last too long, and Generate Blocks came out with their product, Generate Blocks. I used Generate Press Theme for many, many years. And I really wanted to go towards the block side of things and kind of stick a little bit more native to WordPress. So I got very much into Generate Press and Generate Blocks. And on the Admin Bar's YouTube channel, I create a bunch of content around that. So that's pretty much the only thing I build with these days, and enjoy that quite a bit.
There's quite a few tools which are getting a lot of attention at the moment, aren't there? You know, page builders like Bricks and things like that. But I'm a bit like you. I've ended up with Generate Blocks as my weapon of choice. It just, this tiny palette of five or six blocks that more or less do anything. If you're prepared to spend a few minutes figuring out what all the options are, they can really get you 90% of, well, almost a pixel perfect design, I would say, from Photoshop into the block editor. Yeah, really, really nice. Okay, so 70% of the time over on the Admin Bar, growing that community, and 30% back in the world of web design and dealing with clients. If I was to come to you in a year's time, are you predicting that that 30% will still be 30%? Are you focusing more in the future on creating content and all of that? Or is it building up the agency more? What are you trying to do?
Yeah, I definitely prefer my time in the Admin Bar more, I would say, than I do dealing with putting out client fires. But for several reasons, I really don't want to give up the agency. One is I have 80 clients on care plans that bring in a lot of recurring revenue that would kind of seem silly to get rid of. So I'm not in any hurry to do that. And I also feel like, you know, there's been lots of content creators and community builders and things like that before. And I do see ones that completely leave the agency world. You know, they're not keeping up with what's going on in agencies today. So part of me wants to just keep my foot in the door of that world. You know, I feel like it makes me better prepared to help shepherd the community when I'm actually in the trenches doing the same work all the time. So I don't imagine that ratio will change a bunch, maybe 80-20. I might be 80-20 now. I hadn't done a scientific study on that, but the 80-20 thing is probably good enough for me.
And in terms of the admin bar, I mean, it began as a Facebook group, and I would imagine largely the interactions with your community there, this 10,000 strong community, is done through the platform of Facebook. How do you find that? I personally have gone through a bit of a journey trying to really remove Facebook from my life, because yeah. I'm just not the sort of person that is able to resist the algorithm. You know, you put Facebook in front of me and I'm losing 6 hours on meaningless scrolling. And there's no way that I could resist it. So I had to step away for my own sanity, really. I mean, we have a Facebook group, but, you know, if you're in there, you'll realize there's not a lot going on. How do you cope with that? And also the question of, what's your thoughts about relying on Facebook as the platform which now is generating 70% of your income? Because we've all heard horror stories about waking up one day to realize your Facebook account's been deleted or something like that.
Well, I appreciate you reminding me to take my anxiety medicine today. Had I get to do this all over again, that's probably not the route I would go. But here we are, and getting people to switch at this point is very, very difficult.
Yeah.
People come to Facebook because it's convenient for them and they're there anyways, you know, the people who are on Facebook. One way to kind of help my reliance on that has been building up an email list. So a few years back, we started a newsletter, and I try to keep some parity between the group members and the people on the list. So the list is only maybe 8,200 people, and there's closing in on 10,000 people in the group. So a good number of them are on the email list too. So if Facebook died tomorrow, at least I would have a way to contact all those people. And then we have a Patreon-ish type thing that I set up, where we have a Slack group. So there's 150 or so people inside there. So much smaller community, but it's behind a paywall. So try to do a little bit of those things. But yeah, I wouldn't advise somebody to build everything on Facebook. But the truth is, we get a lot of people that join the group and find us through Facebook's algorithm. So there's good and bad with it. But while everybody's wishing bad things on Mark Zuckerberg, I'm quietly rooting him on and hoping he does the right thing.
That's right.
I mean, so much of my business relies on it.
Totally amazing what they give you for no money down. Obviously, you know, there's the whole advertising model that they've got and everything. But, you know, you set up a group, you click a few buttons, type in a one field, what's the name of this group going to be? And you're off to the races. You've got all the tools there that you need. And yeah, absolutely amazing. And obviously, if your audience are there and are happy to be there, that's brilliant. So, okay, anxiety levels down. That's good. One of the things that we're going to talk about, in fact, let's just get stuck into it, is the third, I believe, the third survey that you've done of WordPress professionals. 1,144 people took your survey. Do you want to just give us the skinny on what the point of the survey is? We'll go into all of the individual questions and the answers, but what are you roughly trying to figure out with this?
Yeah, so this started back in March of 2022. So as you said, this is the third time we've done this annually. The idea was, you know, we share a lot of stuff inside the group with each other, but there's some things that, you know, people aren't as open and honest about sharing when their name's attached to it and everybody will know. Like, how much money do you make? So there's kind of some black boxes in our industry. And as you come into this industry, you might not know, like, if you've been working at it for 10 years and you're barely making $25,000 a year, do you know if that's normal or are you way behind? Or there's no benchmarks there for you, know? So our idea was to create some kind of survey to just take the temperature of the community and find where everybody's at. Pricing and revenue and those types of things are part of it. But we really, you know, WordPress has a survey as well where it's kind of more focused on the platform. Ours was really to focus more on like the freelancer agency side of it, and see how people's businesses are really set up, how they're growing, what's changing about them. And the idea was if we did this year over year, we could kind of see some trends and changes in the industry. But really, it started just out of my own curiosity of like, okay, well, I know what I made this year and I know what my expenses were, but how does that compare to everybody else? Not that it's a competition, but if I'm not doing something I should be, or I'm doing something that maybe is getting me further ahead that I could be sharing with people, I would really like to know those things. So it really just started out of my own curiosity, and it's been interesting to do it year over year and kind of see how these things change.
Yeah, I guess the trend bit is the most interesting bit, for me at least anyway. You know, the idea of doing one of them and then just shelving that, you'd get some interesting data, but how it rises, how it falls, what the income was 2 years ago is not the same as what the income is now. And so all of that really fascinating. We don't really have a way, Carl and I were chatting just before we hit record, and we haven't really got a technique for going through this, but we're just going to take it piece by piece, talk about some of the interesting data which is coming out of there. So should we just crack off? Oh, firstly, I should say the URL for this is theadminbar.com, all as one word, no hyphens or anything, theadminbar.com/ and then the numbers 2024-survey, 2024-survey. So maybe, honestly, press pause, go and spend 25 minutes, half an hour digging around and seeing what's there, and then, you know, come back. Yeah, don't press pause and don't come back. Don't do that. Don't be silly. Come back. And when you've come back, we'll have things to talk about. So should we go right from the top? Let's go through the numbers. How many people, and has your survey grown over the years?
Yeah.
Any more people doing it?
So yeah, I do want to give a bit of a disclaimer, but I'll answer your questions first. So the first year we had 321 people fill it in. The second year we had 667, so it just about doubled. And then this year we had 1,144, so it about doubled again, which is great news because the more data we get, the better. However, 1,144 people is not everybody, right? This isn't representative of a true scientific study. We have a small sample size here. We also have people from all over the world in developing countries, people who have just started out that are working solo or part-time, and people who are running a 12-person team and have been doing it for 20 years. So there's a big mix of people in there. So part of the challenge of conducting a survey like this, and I'm not like, this isn't my thing, or I don't know a whole bunch about it. Like I said, I was just curious and was the one that did it. I'm not a stats nerd. I barely graduated high school because of math. So prerequisites and disclaimers there. So representative as a whole, there was 1,144 freelancers and agency owners. On average, people had 11 years experience. That's when we average everybody's experience together. 73% of the people who filled in the survey are running their business full time. The average team size is 2. The majority of the people, 475 of them, came from the USA. That was followed by the UK, which was 134 people. Australia had 83, Canada 82, and then a whole bunch of countries behind that. So as we talk about these numbers today, those are looking at everything as a whole. So those numbers can be skewed, like I said, by the people who've been doing this forever or the people who are just doing this part-time. So that's kind of the picture that you need to paint in your mind. However, on the page that you mentioned, you have access to the Airtable base, which is how I collect all these surveys. And you can go in there and actually sort and filter all this information. So one thing that I think is interesting, and that's where I think the gold really is in here, is you could narrow this down to say, okay, well, I only want to look at the results from people in the United States like me, who have been doing this for at least 5 years, like me, who are working solo, like me. And then you can filter out everybody who doesn't meet that criteria and then see how all the numbers break down. So you can get some really granular information there. Of course, with only 1,000 or so entries, as you start filtering all those things down, you have less and less data. So it becomes a little less reliable. So all that's just to say, yes, I know these aren't perfect numbers. This isn't the rule and the definitive answer on all these things, but it does give you kind of an idea and a taste.
Caveat emptor, yeah. By the way, just so that you know, if you carry on this survey for the next 20 years and you receive exponential growth in the way that you have, 1.2 billion WordPress professionals will be.
The problem is I'll have to upgrade my Airtable account.
I'm not sure if I'm ready for that. That's not good. Yeah, slim it back. Okay, so we've got that intuition. We know that the data will be slightly skewed in one way. One of the curious things that comes out of that, though, is the 11 years experience thing. That is, honestly, I just had this intuition that this industry is people who just ebb and flow in, try it for a couple of years, you know, with the tools that we've got these days, give it a go, drop out, don't carry on, come go. But 11 years, that's a career. If you've been doing something for 11 years, you are really committed to it. And obviously that's the average. Presumably there's ones that are significantly higher and ones that are significantly lower. Okay.
Yeah, and I think part of this depends on like when they decided they started doing, you know, a lot of people started building websites in high school and then didn't have a business till they were 30, you know, so they might count their experience from when they were in high school, you know,
yeah.
So grain of salt, like with all of it.
It's skewed very heavily towards the USA. 475 of the participants are based in the US. And then the UK, assuming this is the data that I'm reading, is, you know, the top to the bottom. UK second, 134, then Australia, then Canada. And we can read into that what we would. But here's the first data that comes out of it, or at least the first one that you have picked as of interest to us. 72%, so really roughly three quarters of people charge less than $5,000 for a website. Did you supply the $5,000 figure and say, are you beyond that or are you below that? Or is that just how it came out when they put in their numbers?
Yeah, so surveying is so difficult. I didn't want to do fill in the blank because then it becomes really, really hard to parse all those numbers. So I gave people ranges. So the ranges were from $100 to $999. $1,000 to $2,500, $25,000 to $5,000, $5,000 to $10,000, $10,000, $20,000, $20,000, $40,000, and $40,000 plus. So you had a range to choose from, and people just selected, you know, where are their average websites kind of in those ranges. And then for the headline of this little stat, I ended up pulling out that 72% were less than $5,000. That was based on 34% of people about were in the $25,000 to $5,000 range, about 26% of people were in the $1,000 to $2,500 range, and 11% of people were in the $100 to $1,000 range. So adding all those together, I thought that was the more important number there. 5,000 seems kind of like one of those milestones. I know when I started, it was like, that was way out there. I was never going to charge $5,000 for a website. And it feels like one of those humps that you got to get over, you know? So I thought that was kind of a good number to look at these numbers from.
Yeah, I guess if you are in the region of $5,000 and you can turn around, if you've got a real solid pipeline of clients and you can do what, I don't know, 30 of those in a year. So let's say one a week or something. I mean, who has that pipeline? I don't know, but that would be quite an impressive thing, I guess. Then you're in the region of what, $60,000 a year? I don't know what the current cost of living in the US would be, but in the UK, I think that would be, you wouldn't be living a very particularly affluent lifestyle, put it that way.
Yeah. And you got to be thinking too, like that's gross and not
yeah,
net. That's
yeah, yeah, yeah.
All your expenses and everything.
So. Yeah. So it, for many people, this industry is quite a tough thing to make a good living from. And actually, it's interesting that your stats, you've got the, so on, underneath each of the stats on the admin bar website, there's like a little accordion that you can click and you can reveal the like the up and down trends. And the up trend in the low ballpark number, so below $5,000, that's trending up. 5,000 to 20,000 is trending down. Curiously, 20 to 40,000 is trending up. So if you're in that little sliver, that's, you know, that's a nice place to be. And then there's half of 1% of people are charging 40,000 or more. So it's becoming a harder industry if you're not able to charge a decent amount, say 10,000, 20,000 per website. That's what I'm reading from it anyway.
Yeah. And so I don't want to do caveats the whole time, but I've just gotten so much feedback from this. I don't want to give people the wrong impression or feel like I'm trying to tell them one thing that's not true. You can look at numbers so many different ways, right? One thing about the trend lines is we're not necessarily surveying the exact same people every year. So it's hard to know, like, is that really going up? Last year we had 600 people. This year we had 1,100 people. Some of those are the same, and obviously a lot of them are new. So the trend things are a little bit tricky. And the 20,000 to 40,000 that's going up, I believe that's going up just like a fraction of a percentage point. So it was up, but not a ton. So
okay.
It is interesting, though, that, and we'll get to this later when we talk about recurring revenue. If you are going to do projects for less than $5,000 a website, then yeah, and you're not going to have recurring revenue as a big part of your agency, then yeah, you're going to have to crank out a ton of websites to make a living, way more than I want to build in a year.
Yeah, you really have to have a solid pipeline of, 40. I mean, it's one a week, probably multiple a week, every week without fail. And if you're solo, goodness knows how you're going to manage that. That whole workflow. But okay, that's fascinating. That's really interesting. So that's the top level stat. Let's zoom down. Let's go to the next one. 68% of businesses surveyed had a gross revenue of less than $100,000 in 2023. So, any intuitions around that? Is $100,000, is that like a number in USD, which represents, I don't know, a reasonable lifestyle, or you can get by on that? What does that look like?
Yeah, I've realized now I'm getting old too, and I'm the guy who says, like, I can't believe what things cost nowadays.
Yeah, that's right. I can't believe.
Yeah. So, $100,000 has kind of traditionally been a big milestone. Like, six figures is a pretty decent salary. Now, it's not as much as it used to be, but I think most people that are making $100,000, especially as like a salary, would feel they're doing just fine. Now, this is top end gross revenue. This is not profit. And we got to remember that this is an average of people who have two people on staff. So, you know, maybe we say our businesses don't have a lot of expenses. Let's say 25%. So now we're down to 75%, and you're going to have to share some of this with the people you employ. You know, so there's another. So yeah, you're probably back at 68% of these people making less than $50,000 a year, which we'll get into that here in a second, because we did ask that question. But $100,000 was like one of those first milestones I got in my agency of like, okay, now I feel like things are going okay because I did my first $100,000 in a year. So it's a bit arbitrary. Like the last question, people's answers were a drop down with different ranges. 0 to 50, 50 to 100, 100 to 150, and so on. So you can kind of see the different ranges people fall in. The biggest percentage was 45% of people were in the 0 to $50,000 gross revenue range, which I just have to imagine are people new to the industry. Because if those people with 11 years of experience are making less than $50,000, I'm going to assume this is a side job.
Well, unless, I guess, geography might play a part. You know, if you're based in a different part of the world where the cost of everything is cheaper, that,
sure,
I guess that could represent a decent income. But yeah, if we're just basing it off US dollars, which I suppose, you know, most of us are.
And we, like I said, you can go into that Airtable and drill all that down and find out exactly where all these people are. But if we're just talking about kind of the average in the survey, the top countries were the US, UK, Australia, and Canada, and all those are going to have a higher cost of living compared to a developing nation. So
the next one is very much tied to it. It's based around this $100,000 thing again, only this time we're flipping it and we're saying more than. And is this, so you've used different language here. You've said make more than. Previously, the previous question was had a gross revenue of. This means, this next question is makes more than. Is that after, is that net, is that profit? So it's less than 10% of freelancers, agency owners, make $100,000 per year. So over to you for that.
Yeah, so if you look at the, I just realized now I have a mistake now that I explained this. The little yellow eyebrow text above the bigger text on there shows the question I asked in the survey. So the last question we talked about was your agency's total revenue for the year. This question now is how much did you pay yourself in 2023?
Right.
So this
Got
is assuming you're a freelancer or an agency owner, and you get to decide your own salary based on that. How much did you pay yourself? And this is a new question we hadn't asked before. In the past, we asked like that gross revenue question and then your profit margin to try to get at this answer, but people's math was all over the place and they were kind of unreliable results. So this year we decided just to go straight at it and ask, you know, how much money did you put in your own pocket this year? And so that breakdown was 41% was less than 20,000. 29% was between 29 and 50,000. 19% was between 50,000 and 100,000. And then we had 6.9% paying themselves between 100,000 and 200,000, and just 2.72% paying themselves more than $200,000. Now, people can answer this question in different ways. At least here in the States, a lot of people want to pay themselves less on paper because then they pay less taxes and then they take dividends and things like that. So hopefully, you know, on average, we got a guesstimate of how much money goes into your wallet. But I just thought it was interesting to see, you know, what's typical for somebody to pay themselves to be a freelancer or agency owner.
That is really interesting as well, because it definitely skews towards the lower end of, you know, so for example, over $200,000 is not 3%, 2.7%. The combined over 100 is just shy of 10%, 9 point something. And then the vast majority, so 90% is 99,999 or less, with a full 41% in the category of 19,000 or 20,000 or less. So again, there's loads of caveats depending on how you decide to pay yourself and the structure of your business and what have you. But the data that's coming out of there is that this is an industry where a lot of people are struggling to make ends meet, I would imagine.
Yeah, and we'll see that later in the survey too. I ask about people's biggest challenges. But this number did surprise me that it was on the lower end. And I don't want to say that to throw shade at anybody or anything like that. I want all of our industry to thrive. I want us to all make more money. Now, not everybody does this to make money. There are people in here that work full time, but their spouse brings in money and they don't have to do this to make a living, right? So there's all kinds of different ways of looking at this. Or, you know, for some people, I have three young kids. So the other thing that's very important besides money is time to be able to spend with them and take them to their 1.5 million activities every week. So there's lots of different, you know, benefits we get from running our own business. But the truth is we have to make money to live, right? So it's an interesting thing to look at. It would be interesting to talk to all these people and find out, you know, are they in the less than 20,000 and trying to get more, or is that a comfortable number for them? And this survey doesn't really tell us those numbers, but it's still interesting to look
at. Yeah, my head is going in all sorts of directions from that question, especially around the ease of making a website nowadays. I mean, the tools that we've got in the WordPress space are just so breathtakingly easy in so many cases to put something out there which is half decent. And, you know, there's loads of educational material out there so that you can get yourself up to speed doing something which is credible fairly quickly. And obviously, you know, when something is difficult, you can command a higher salary. When something is easier, you clearly can't. And yeah, that's just where my head went. You know, the ease of building websites with WordPress definitely, I presume, driving the cost down a little bit of what you can actually charge. Okay, right, next one. Have I got this right? Is it the next one? Yes. Around 32% of freelancers or agency owners make the majority of their income from recurring revenue. So this is over the last decade, 15 years, has become such an integral part of everybody's business. And getting this strategy right, you mentioned, you know, it's a big part of what you're doing. Getting this right is really important. 32% making it the majority of their income. Okay, over to you.
Yeah, to me, that's such a huge positive in this survey. You know, where I might have been a little bit saddened to see the overall revenue numbers, I'm really excited to see how many people are making a majority of their income from recurring revenue. So the question we ask people is, what percentage of your revenue is from recurring revenue sources? And we just gave them some percentage breakdowns there to choose from. For me, the recurring revenue has been about, not about raising the roof of how much I can make with my agency, but raising the floor of how little I could make if I didn't do anything new. You know what I mean? So anytime you start a new business, the thing you worry about is the ups and downs, and you got bills to pay and mouths to feed and all those kinds of things. And there's just risk associated with that. It's not the same level of risk you have when you take a salary job. So one way to mitigate that risk is to get a lot of recurring revenue in place. So at a minimum, you bring in X amount of dollars. So my goal starting out was always, I want to get my recurring revenue to cover my minimum bills I have, you know, that are my responsibility in the family, right? So if we need to pay the mortgage and the utility bills and all that, if I could get my recurring revenue to cover all those things, and then project work, one-off things, we're all gravy on top of that, I feel like I'd be in a pretty good spot. And I think there's a lot of people aiming to do the same, which I think is definitely the best place to be in. It, through the admin bar and then through the mastermind groups that I run, I think the majority of people who leave this industry or burn out or decide, you know, they couldn't make it work, one thing most of them have in common is there was not enough recurring revenue there.
Right.
And they were just on that roller coaster of gotta hustle every month to bring in enough money. And that's hard to sustain over a long period
of
time.
Much more hand to mouth. This is the golden goose, isn't it? If you can crack this one and make this work for you. So yeah, that's fascinating and really nice that a lot of people are managing to put that into place. Okay, let's move on. So I'm kind of reading the results. You're ending up reading the questions. So let's keep going with that. Perfect. The average hourly rate for anyone surveyed is $94 an hour, which is $2 lower than last year. I guess, obviously, if you're into building projects, this is going to be significant. If you can put the recurring revenue in, it probably matters less. Again, I don't live in North America. I don't know what that means. But if you could put a 40-hour week in at that rate, I'm sure that that would be okay. But it's probably not the story for most people. I imagine there's an hour.
The reality of hourly billing is you can't bill every hour you're actually working.
Or awake.
I think most of us try to avoid hourly billing. Most people I talk to anyways, hourly billing is not the focus of the way they want to charge things. But in my experience, you end up billing some things hourly or basing some kind of fixed price based on how long it's going to take you. Like, I'm not into trading time for money as much as I can avoid it. But at some point, you do have to relate how much something costs back to how much time it's going to take at some point. So this was just to get a sense of like what is an average hourly rate. We do have this come up in the group fairly often. Like, you know, my client asked me, you know, how much this was going to take. I told him it would take 2 or 3 hours. How much do you charge per hour? So to get a sense of where the industry is at, sounds like about $100 an hour is where people are at. Came out to 94. Last year it was at 96. Which are, you know, fairly close in there. But I would say 100 is average. So what I've told some of the people in my mastermind groups is if you think you only do average work, then charge $100. But if you think you're above average, and I know that they are, they need to be charging above average prices. So if your prices are below $100 and you're in the UK, Australia, United States, Canada, I would definitely encourage you to look at that and see that, you know, that's the average of what people are charging, and you're probably doing better than average work, so you should probably charge accordingly.
Kind of interesting thing there, though, is also what the market can bear. So if you are, I don't know, a plumber and you need a website, you're probably going to be going in with an intuition of, okay, that's what it costs. You know, I've had a bunch of quotes in, it's all coming out around there, and it's not minimum wage, put it that way. And I know it's hard to charge 40 hours a week at that rate, but it is not minimum wage. So your skill set is valued, but whether or not you can find that is obviously another question. Okay, this next one is this was the one that stuck out for me actually, and not necessarily for the right reasons. I am not going to pretend like I've got this piece of the jigsaw puzzle in place in everything that I do, because I don't. It's the accessibility question. So nearly 1/10 of, and actually it's interesting that you chose this bit of data, because it really does sort of scream, doesn't it? Nearly 1/10 of freelancers and agencies don't consider accessibility, and here's the key phrase, at all when building a website. So it's not to say that lots of websites aren't accessible, it's just that 1 out of 10 projects by the freelancers that you surveyed not even coming onto the radar. It's just not a thing. I don't know if you've got any commentary on this.
Yeah. So obviously, I also have to present this information in a way that makes it intriguing and makes it easy for people to talk about. I could have just as easily said 90% of people do consider accessibility.
Right, yeah.
That headline doesn't test as well, I don't think. So I decided to go the other way. I think this one's really hard to survey too. So I gave people three choices. They don't consider accessibility at all. They strive for best practices. We'll come back to that. Or they adhere to WCAG guidelines. Adhering to WCAG guidelines is fairly straightforward in black and white. We only had about 9.31% of people that do that. We had 9.4% of people who don't consider it at all. So either end of the spectrum. I know you guys brought this up on the weekly show, and somebody mentioned it was the perfect bell curve on this.
Yeah, that's right.
Kind of the way it works out. See, I do listen every week.
Thank you.
So the mushy part in the middle is where it's hard. Strive for best practices. 81% of people are striving for best practices. Well, I can tell you when I go to 81% of websites, it doesn't look like they were striving for best practices. But it is encouraging to look at these numbers, especially over time, and see what's going up and what's going down. And striving for best practices going up and don't consider accessibility at all is going down. And that's the trend we want. We want more people paying attention to it. Like you, I'm not an expert at this. I get things wrong in every single build. What I want to encourage and what I'm trying to do myself is exercise the muscle of, before I hit publish, did I question the accessibility of everything I just edited or created on this page? Just like we used to have to remember, oh yeah, I need to go check if it looks good on tablet and mobile, right? You would just be hitting publish and then remember to go do that. I want people to build that same muscle with accessibility. Before you hit publish, let's at least ask the question. Even if you don't get it perfect, if you got it 10% better, that's absolutely an improvement. So I just like to see that this number is going up over time, that people are at least trying. I think as laws are coming into effect, both in Europe and eventually here in the States as well, adhering to guidelines is going to become more popular. I think the agencies that thrive are probably going to be the ones that actually do that and understand those guidelines and how to adhere to them. So it'll be interesting to see how that number changes once we have 1.2 billion people answering this.
That's right, 20 years from now. But you're right. I think the ambulance chasing lawyers that are going to start to become more and more prevalent, because there will be low hanging fruit all over the place, they'll make this an imperative. And the other thing to say is it's not, you know, 100% or nothing. This bit in the middle of the bell curve where you've done what you can with the skills that you've got and the budget available, I think that's going to become a bigger piece of the pie. But yeah, interesting and slightly alarming statistic of a tenth doing nothing at all. And, you know, I guess maybe that speaks to the people that are coming into the industry, you know, picking up WordPress page builders, don't really know that that's even a thing. It's certainly something that you can avoid. You don't have to do it. Well, you probably do in law, but, you know, in order to press publish, there's no requirement for you to fill any of that kind of stuff out. So, yeah, okay, well, that'll change, I'm sure.
I think when I started this 7 years ago, like, nobody was talking about accessibility. And now you have a conversation about accessibility all the time. We did a results group call with some people when I revealed these results. And one of the people on the call was Miriam from Elementor. And she was talking about some of the improvements Elementor has been doing in accessibility. And what's amazing about that is, like, when Elementor, who publishes, you know, who helps run millions of websites, when they do an accessibility update, that immediately improves the accessibility of millions of websites at a time. So it's not just on us as freelancers and developers. Obviously, we need to be doing it, but we need to be having these conversations and bringing these things up. And if nothing else from this question, now I've had about 5 different conversations with people about accessibility. Hopefully that at least makes people think about it and talk about it more. And may we expect more out of the tools we have as well.
Yeah. Interesting. Good point. There's an SEO one here, 96%, almost the full Monty, of respondents offer basic or thorough SEO. So in the same way that nobody was talking about accessibility 10 years ago, if you go back 20 years ago, nobody was talking about SEO because, you know, it was like Yahoo Index and things like that. There was no Google. There was no way of gaming Google or anything like that. Now it's just like, it's everything. You can't not SEO your site. How could you possibly have a site that you shipped where the client hasn't come and bludgeoned you about, oh, we're going to do well in Google? And so this is maybe where the accessibility debate will end up in a few years' time. But everybody's giving it a go.
Yep. And I could almost probably get rid of this question next year. We'll see. But I think the interesting part about this is that there's so many disciplines within our discipline, especially for people like me who are solo, and I know a lot of your audiences as well. Like, you have to think about copywriting and accessibility and design and development and SEO. There's like a lot of disciplines that go into this. There are people who their entire job is just SEO. So the fact that you're supposed to be keeping up with this is really difficult. But it's interesting for new people that are coming in the industry to see, like, okay, you pretty much are going to have to offer some sort of accessibility or SEO services through your website builds to just keep up with the standards of what the industry is doing.
Yeah.
So it's basically everyone at this point.
Do you know, that's a really interesting point that you just made about the fact that the industry is made up of lots of little sub industries. So SEO is a thing. You could totally do that as a job. Obviously, you know, there's limited work, but you could forge partnerships and I'm sure work with agencies and what have you. And accessibility. I've got the feeling that in a few years' time, there will be people, well, there already are, but there'll be more and more people who that's their thing, you know, consultancy work and helping other agencies and freelancers out with that side of things. So, okay, the future is bright in that sense. Okay, and then we got one which is sort of like glowing. And it's glowing because I guess you find this one particularly interesting. Without paid discovery, only 12% average $5,000 or more per project. With it, 68% do. I'm struggling to parse that in my head. Can you help me out?
I struggled writing this. I even got ChatGPT to help me, and this is the shit I end up with. So the idea was, do you offer paid discovery? So are you charging clients to go through a discovery process? We ended up with the answer being 45% of people never do, 10% always do, and 44% sometimes do. So what do we get out of that? So this is one of the questions here where just seeing the results of who does, who doesn't, who sometimes does, doesn't really tell us a whole lot other than only 10% of people are always charging for discovery. However, one of the cool things that you can do is kind of cross-reference some of these results with other results in the survey. So that's what I did to get this top line headline, which you read and makes no sense. I'm going to try to explain that.
Oh, didn't mean it like that.
No. I struggled with this one too. So I'm glad you pointed it out. Maybe I can workshop this. So basically what I did is I went back through and filtered out the survey and said, okay, of those people who never charge discovery, what percentage charge $5,000 or less per project? So if you don't charge for discovery, there was only 12% of people who charged more than $5,000.
Oh, project. I get it. Okay.
The vast majority of people who don't do discovery are charging less than $5,000. Then I flip-flopped that and said, okay, now I only want to see the results of people who always charge discovery. And that average project price of $5,000 or more went up to 68%, from 12% to 68%. So what I'm trying to infer with that is that the people who are charging for discovery are on average charging a lot more for websites.
Okay.
So there are reasons for this, right? So what that top line headline says is if you charge for websites, there's a 68% if you charge for discovery sessions, there's a 68% chance you're going to charge $5,000 or more for a website. But if you don't, there's only a 12% chance you'll be able to charge $5,000 or more.
That is a really interesting statistic. And obviously, you know, statistics, easy for you to say, Nathan.
Right.
But that is fascinating. You know, there's a real credible line between doing something which everybody could do, going into an office or what have you and doing discovery with them, doing it on Zoom, whatever, and the presumed credibility or whatever it is that brings in train that enables you to pitch a higher rate. The perceived credibility, whatever it is that comes off the back of that, is really important. And they're not just slight differences. And again, you know, the data is readable in all sorts of ways, but from 12% to 68%, that is a giant difference. So everybody, I'm guessing your advice would be do discovery.
Yeah, so it's been transformational for my business. And the reason I made this answer glow on the page was because it's something we've talked about quite a bit inside the admin bar. It's helped me tremendously. And I think there's a couple reasons why this number changes so much with the people who do and who don't. One, the point I would like to get across to people is when you do discovery and you charge for it, you're much more thorough about doing it than when you do discovery and you don't charge for it, because now you feel like you owe them to do a really good job. And when you do a really thorough job at discovery, you're just going to find that there's more to the project than you thought there was going to be.
Boom, that's it.
And chances are you're going to charge more for all that work, because now you've spelled everything out in great detail and now all those things need to be accounted for. So I think just naturally, you're going to charge more. I also think that skewing this number is the people who are charging for discovery are probably further along in their business.
Yeah.
People probably don't do that in their first year. So the people that are further along are also probably charging more. So there's some of that mixed in it as well. But I know from my personal anecdote, so we'll say a survey of one, as soon as I started charging for discovery, I started charging a lot more for websites too. And I think the numbers back up my experience on that as well.
Interesting. Yeah, that whole discovery process does teach you a lot, not only about your business and the kind of things that you want to ask, but about yourself. Teaches you what you know, how good you are at getting in a room and getting information out of people who in some cases are just bored rigid and don't want to have anything to do with the website, but it's their job and you've got to suck the stuff out of them. Fascinating. Okay, so let's move on. We'll do this question here. Well, we're moving into sort of like products in the WordPress space a little bit now. The first one is Brix. Brix is a page builder. It's grown enormously in popularity over the last couple of years. And according to the survey, Brix was the only page builder to increase its numbers over the last year, racking in 32% of the total. Do you have an intuition that that's some skew with the audience that you've got in your group? Is there like a, you know, is there just some sort of general love of Brix in the community that you have? Or
yeah, so I think there's some of that. Now, just going back 3 years ago when we first did the survey, Brix was really, really new. They came in at 3%. So
wow.
Basically nothing. Last year when we did this, they had rose to, and I'm sorry, I didn't have all this pulled up.
It's all right.
They had rose from 0.3% to 12.4%. And then this year up to 32%. So they are ascending no matter how we slice up this data. This obviously does not go to the point of which page builder has the most users or has the most websites on the web. Those numbers are completely different. This is the way this question was phrased was, which page builder do you currently prefer? And then so people picked. Now, I have a bunch of Elementor sites that I've built and that I support and that are still online, but I don't use Elementor. It's not my preferred page builder at this point. So part of what this question is asking is not necessarily which page builder is the most popular. It's which page builder are people most enthusiastic about today? So we can see that Elementor's numbers went down. That doesn't surprise me based on the conversations I have in our community. Elementor's still huge. It still dwarfs Bricks in amount of users and amount of websites, but there's a lot more conversation today in our industry about Bricks as there is Elementor.
Interesting.
So the numbers were partially skewed because this survey got picked up by somebody in our group that went and shared it in the Bricks Facebook group.
Okay.
And a lot of people in Bricks then wanted to go fill this out to support their page builder. Now, people who just filled in the survey and answered one or two questions, I deleted all those submissions because I felt like there was an obvious agenda to that. So I tried to protect against that a bit. And when this was shared in the Bricks community, there was probably a couple dozen submissions that just chose Bricks and nothing else in the survey. So I filtered those out. However, this was skewed by the fact that this was shared in that large community. However, there's lots of Elementor users and people who work at Elementor in our community that knew I was doing this survey, and they didn't bother to share it in the Elementor group, which goes back to me to say a little bit about the enthusiasm of this. So people that are using Bricks and prefer it today are more enthusiastic about it than people who are using Elementor.
Shiny.
I think that's something.
Yeah, it's shiny. It's very shiny. Yeah. So, okay. So it goes like this. Bricks is at the top in the survey that you've got, followed by Blocks. No suite in particular, just Blocks, which was just under 20%. And then we go down Elementor, Divi, Beaver Builder, Oxygen. The interesting thing for me there is A, that Bricks is at the top, and that rise is meteoric. And honestly, you've got to be living under a rock to have not noticed the conversation about it. It is very, very popular. But also that Elementor is lower than Blocks in that survey. I honestly would have thought that Blocks would have been kind of like a distant relation there, but okay. But it's down from the previous year, but maybe that's because Bricks is eating its lunch in that audience. Okay, so let's talk about Generate Blocks. 50% of respondents who build with the Blocks, they're using Generate Blocks. And again, have you got any intuitions about that? We spoke and we actually talked about Generate Blocks just a moment ago. So do you think there's some skew there?
Yeah, so I definitely do. Now, so in the last question, if somebody chose Blocks as their preferred page builder, they got a second question that said, okay, which block package do you use? Now, I have probably like 200 videos on YouTube of me talking about Generate Blocks, and then those people come to our community. So I've definitely skewed these numbers by the fact okay. a lot of people know me for Generate Blocks and then filled in this survey. What I thought was interesting here, again, this isn't indicative of how many active installs, because I think Cadence will beat all of these by a wide margin. So this to me, the only interesting thing about this was it was Cadence and Generate Blocks in the lead and everything else in a real distant, you know, we went from 50% with Generate Blocks, 32% with Cadence, and then the next highest was Spectra with 4%. Now, I think Spectra has more installs than Generate Blocks does, and there are reasons for that as well, but just an interesting tidbit. I don't think there's a ton to read into this other than I like seeing Generate Blocks do well.
Yeah, so, yeah, we love Tom. Hooray, Tom. Okay, let's move on then. So referrals remain the most popular way for agencies to source leads, with 71% of respondents listing it as the number one lead source. I'm guessing I could have actually made that number up myself. I probably would have even put it a bit higher, but there we go. 71% as the number one source. Be nice to your clients, in other words, and get them to do advertising for you when you finish the project. Anything to add?
Yeah, I think some people might look at this and think, yeah, I don't want to say anything bad about referrals. Referrals are great. They're way easier to sell because you've already got, you know, a referral. Somebody's already said something great about you. But I do worry about the putting all your eggs in one basket.
And good that point. Can be, yeah.
There's also like there's a division in referrals between proactive and reactive, right? So some referrals are just, you do a good job for your client and your client goes out and mentions you to a friend. And that's great, but you didn't really do anything other than provide a good service, which is important. But there's a difference between doing that and being proactive, like setting up some kind of referral program or asking for referrals. Or one thing we talk about in some content is like putting a little PS in your email saying you're looking for referrals. There's some proactive things you can do that I think could boost those numbers better. But it's interesting to see the other options were networking, organic/search, paid ads, and cold calling. And networking got 15%, but nothing else broke double digits.
Isn't that interesting, though? That networking and everything below that was nowhere near that. You know, the combination of every other way of getting clients just didn't even come close. So I would have thought that paid ads would have been a reasonably successful way of doing it. Cold calling. I mean, how many Facebook videos or YouTube videos have you seen with, you know, the great claims of we've got this great way of making cold calling a thing which can spin revenue into your business? Well, it looks like it's not working in this industry. 0.8%, so less than 1% of people having success with cold calling. But I think you're right. I think that's a really good point about not putting all your eggs in one basket, but it does seem to be successful. I guess it depends which part of the world you live in as well. Like where I am, the physical location where I live, it's very community driven. And that really does work. You know, Brian knows Jane and Jane knows John and John knows Brian again. And there's this virtuous cycle that you tell one person and all of a sudden 100 people know. It's very effective.
I think the danger in that though is you typically get referrals for people who are like your existing clients, right? So your clients hang out with people like them in the same, you know, economic class and things like that. So if you are trying to scale up and get bigger and better clients, that's harder to do through referral marketing than you would think, you know, because you'll end up with a lot of the same types of clients. Sometimes that can be great because you want to stay in a niche or an industry or whatever that may be, but there can also be some challenges with that too. So I don't think it's necessarily a good or a bad thing, but it's something that you should probably be aware of and maybe think about having a second source of leads that does something.
My advice would be hire a Ferrari and some bling jewelry and, you know, take a picture of you hanging out in front of a private jet. That's going to work.
That's right. That's always worked.
That's the way to do it. Okay, moving on. We're going to have to whisk through a few of these, I think, really, because we're nearly at the hour mark and we've got loads to go. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to hand it over. We've got about halfway through all the questions. You've got a flavor of what this survey is, dear listener. Are there any that we haven't got to that you think are worth pulling out that would be worth exploring for the next few minutes?
Yeah, so I think two we could probably land on and then tease everybody. They can go see the rest of these if they go to theadminbar.com/2024-survey.
Nicely done.
I've done this before, yes. So do you have a well-defined niche or audience? So we had 40% say no, 38% say somewhat, and 21% say yes. I did similarly to how I did on the discovery question to ask, like, how does this change how much money you make? 28% of agencies without a niche got over $100,000, while 41% with a niche got over $100,000. So that was my way of kind of showing that having a niche might make you more likely to make more money, which anecdotally I believe is true and I've seen in my own agency, and the numbers did back that up. But again, we can look at these numbers a bunch of different ways. But if you go and break this up, the people who have a niche end up making more money than the people who don't have a niche. And that's just what the numbers bear out.
Just apropos of nothing, and I'm sure you know this, we don't say niche. In the UK, we say niche.
I apologize. I should have said niche. I should have known my audience here.
Kyle, niche.
You cannot take the hick out of me. I won't the way I say it.
Yeah, it's one of those words where every time I hear it, I have to pause. What is that? Oh, yeah. That's this one. For some reason, it just doesn't get into my head. Okay, so that's a nice one. Let's do a couple more, or one more, whatever it is that you've got.
I have somebody British that I follow that talks about the state in which, I don't want to say it out loud to influence here, the state in which the next WordCamp US is going to be located, in Portland?
Oregon.
Okay, so you nailed it. He says Oregon, and it just blows my mind every time.
I'm like, is he from the UK? No.
Yeah.
No. We say oregano, you know, the spice, the herb.
Yeah.
And you say oregano. I think we say oregano, but we say Oregon as well. Anyway,
see, I say it like just to be fancy when I'm in the kitchen, you know? If we put on a British accent, people just think we're fancy. There were a couple questions here about AI tools, which was, this was the first year we were able to do that, because last year when we did the survey, ChatGPT was just really hitting the scene, which is interesting. Doesn't tell us a lot now other than 56% of people are paying for an AI tool. 53% of people said that they're now using an AI tool for something that they used to pay a human to do, which is exciting and a little scary, depending on how you want to look at it.
Yeah.
We'll see how those numbers change in the coming years. I don't know. We can draw a
I have a prediction
right
for you, Carl. They're going way up.
Yeah.
The AI tool usage is just, you know, they're just getting better at an exponential rate, aren't they? And the idea that you can do something by clicking a button that used to take you ages. So a good example is the show notes for this. You know, I drop the audio into an app and it just gets 99% of the words right. It'll get niche wrong. But
I was going to say, I can't wait to see how it parses out that little bit of
an Oregon. It'll get that wrong. Yeah. But in most cases, it gets it right. And a couple of years ago, that just didn't exist. You had to type it all out. And obviously, you know, in this line of work, which is completely aligned to what AI will be good at, because it's going to be good at doing things that are based on a computer. This will be interesting. And I do foresee the day where you just talk to your website. So as a graphic designer, you know, the other red, move it over a bit, give me a cat. No, not that cat, a ginger cat. Okay, great, perfect. Now check if it's responsive, show me it in this orientation. Anyway, I could go on. I think it's going to be brilliant and terrifying in equal measure.
Yep, that's exactly how I feel about it. Scared and excited.
Yeah.
The last one I just wanted to make sure we talked about was, I asked the question, what challenges are you currently facing? And then I gave people a big list of questions. Funny enough, I had ChatGPT help me with possible things people might be struggling with. A lot of these were just based on things I hear in our community, things I personally struggle with. And then ChatGPT filled in some of the gaps. It was also had the ability for people to fill in their own answers, which I don't think was completely intuitive because not many people did. But what I thought was interesting, this was the first time we asked this question. Had I guessed before, I should have had a hypothesis on all these. I would have said not enough work would be the biggest challenge.
That would have been where I would have gone. Yeah.
It actually came in second behind work-life balance, which is very interesting. This was you could answer multiple things in here. You didn't have to just pick one. It's all that apply to you. Work-life balance is definitely a huge struggle of mine, and I'm in good company with 31% of people listing that as a challenge. And I thought that was pretty interesting. It's not something we talk about a ton in our industry that I listen to your podcast. I listen to other podcasts. I'm in our community that has, you know, 30 posts a day. And we just don't talk about work-life balance being a huge struggle. But silently, 31% of people are really struggling with that, which is interesting.
That really is interesting. Not enough work coming in second. Keeping up with technology, that's interesting as well. We live in an industry which is changing rapidly. I imagine there's industries which are changing more rapidly, but you have to keep up. If you are, I don't know, if you're a plumber or something, I'm guessing there's not many innovations happening each year that you need to be aware of. Whereas we've got...
Well, I mean, me and you talked about this before you hit record. We were talking about, I was asking you if you were still doing any agency work, and you said that you weren't. And you said there's young people that are keeping up with all these things, you know? So to me, that kind of sounds like the keeping up with technology part of it was probably part of the reason you're not doing that.
Yeah, I think it is it's a struggle. And I think when you throw AI into the mix, the ability for the technology to get away from us is going to be interesting. Be really interesting to see how that goes. Okay, so exactly on the hour mark, we've gone through, I would say we went through about 55% of the questions, something like that. Okay, so as Kyle said, you can find this at theadminbar.com/2024, their numbers, by the way, dash survey. I'll put the link in the show notes and you'll be able to do a quick search for it on Google, I'm sure. The other thing to say is, as Kyle did say, another interesting thing to do with this data is not just read what Kyle has extrapolated from it, but you can actually go find the Airtable where all of the data is neatly sorted, and go nuts. Find something out for yourself. There might be some little chestnut in there that has yet to be discovered. Kyle, anything else you want to add before we knock it on the head?
No, that's it. I really appreciate you having me on here and being able to share about this. It's a little bit nerdy, but it's fun. And I hope people will, if they're interested in this, go check out the database. The survey is completely anonymous. And then everything that I collect from it is completely open. Anybody can do anything they want with it. I think one thing people are worried about is having an agenda. I have no agenda other than this just fascinates me. And I just want to make sure everybody knows it's completely open for anybody to take and do what they want with it. I have heard from a couple big WordPress agency, companies in our space, hosting type companies, things like that. They actually have meetings about this data every year, which is blowing my mind.
Yeah, that's mind blowing. Well, yeah. Kyle Van Dusen, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Okay, that's all I've got for you today. I really hope that you enjoyed that. If you've got any comments about that, head to wpbuilds.com and search for episode number 384 and leave us a comment there. I would really appreciate it. The WP Builds podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. Find out more by visiting go.me/WPBuilds. We're also supported by Bluehost. Bluehost, redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud, managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. And finally, we are also supported by Omnisend. Omnisend, do you sell stuff online? Then meet Omnisend. Yes, that Omnisend, the email and SMS tool that helps you make $73 from every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of roller coaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up? Try Omnisend today at omnisend.com. And sincere thanks go out to GoDaddy Pro, Bluehost, and Omnisend for keeping the lights on over at WP Builds. Okay, that truly is all I've got time for. I hope that you enjoyed it. We'll see you for the This Week in WordPress show coming up on Monday, 2 p.m. UK time, wpbuilds.com/live. If not, we'll be back in your podcast player of choice next Thursday for an interview episode just like this one. Okay, here comes some cheesy music. I'm going to say stay safe. Have a good week. Bye-bye for now. We'll be right back.